Good afternoon.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Empowerment Network. It's Empowerment 365, 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. Today, we're going to talk about health disparities, but we're going to talk about our mission first. The mission of the National African American Empowerment Association is to ensure that the needs of the African American community is met or are met through the development of programs and services that support, inspire, and motivate and empower each member who will collaborate and partner with organizations to simply promote the peace concept, which is politics, economics, athletics, which encompasses health, wellness, fitness, nutrition, culture, and education. So we will resurrect, promote, develop, and instill the sense of pride and dignity and integrity within our people so that we may become whole again. So on last week, we talked about health disparities and we talked about COVID-19, and we're back again this week, and we're going to be able to take this opportunity to look at where we are in the community, give you an update on what's happening, get some feedback back from those who call in, and have an opportunity to find success in working through some of the issues that we face as African Americans, being positive, peaceful, and productive, but also providing tips to those in our communities or those who are in need the most. So if you would just sit back and relax for just the next 30 minutes or so, take the time to think about what we're talking about, give input where it's needed, and to be a part of this show, it is greatly appreciated. So we're here for you, we're here for the community, and we want to be able to enhance that community by doing the work of working on ourselves. So I'll start with the peace pledge, and that pledge is I will work on myself. And if each of us will commit to working on ourselves, to working on our issues, our concerns, our hurts, and our pains, really looking at the things that hinder us from being successful, if that's in the area of finance and money management, or if that's in the area of economics or understanding the politics in your neighborhood or in your community, but also educating our young people and giving them a voice that they may one day look to us for guidance and then become those leaders themselves. So we're simply trying every day to work on ourselves to become the best people that we can be today and every day. Now, without further delay, I'd like to bring in my co-host and good friend, Stan Macklin. Stan, are you available? Stan's not in right now, so we'll just continue to move forward. Hopefully, we'll get him in soon. So we're talking about health disparities, and to do a recap on last week's show, Dr. Guy came in, professor at VCU, and talked about health disparities. We talked about the COVID-19. We talked about how that we're looking at this pandemic from a perspective of how African Americans are experiencing that and what we can do to educate our people, to motivate and inspire those are in most of need. All right, what are we going to do to help those in need? What are we going to do to look at the issues that are plaguing our community, whether they're health disparities, whether there is economics, of course, there's poverty, right? There's lack of resources, and so on and so forth. So we could go on forever with that. But what I really want to get to today is how we're dealing, how are we coping, how are we managing the situations that happen in our homes, and then taking a look at the health aspect of it as well as the mental health piece, and then come up with a dialogue at the end of the show. So I'm going to, at this point, open the lines up and find out who's on the line today, and we'll get it going that way. Callers, are you there? Who do I have on the line? Anyone there?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My name is Lee.
How are you?
I am well, and yourself?
I'm doing well.
One of the things that I think about when I consider this being closed off, so to speak, and getting back to basics is just kind of what you hinted at. There's a mental and a physical aspect of being well, and spiritual aspect is holistic. And I want to speak to the challenge of how do we strengthen our community. And I don't know that I have any answers, but the first thing that comes to mind is about 40% of how we are physically don't directly relate to any kind of health care that we get. So the social and the economic component of our well-being are affected by education, employment, you know, how safe our neighborhoods are and things of that nature. And all of that plays into our physical well-being, our physical health. And that's not something you can take a pill for. It's not something that, you know, you can, a doctor can advise you on. I'd like to hear you talk a little bit about the holistic component of our health, if you would.
Yeah, well, to me, the holistic piece is in five areas. And I'll start with the first piece being spiritual, right? And that spiritual piece is so important because this is a time now because we are, I like to use the word sequestered, as families together, it's a good time to get to know one another again. It's a good time to basically bring those principles back home again. It's time to reset. It's time to put God back into the family again. And as we continue to work and strive to look at the spiritual component of doing Bible study together or meditating together or reading the Quran together, if that's your faith, or the Buddhist practice, or whatever practice you practice, to be able to implement that with your family now. And then it's the mental piece, the mental component of mindfulness, is to be able to be considerate of your family members. That component, in my mind, is important because how we use our minds, how we use our time together is important. Then you get to the emotional piece. And a lot of times we have trauma in our families because it's heated emotions, right? There's an emotional time right now. The other piece is physical. We can still have time to have physical activities and workout. And the last piece is financial. That fifth piece and all of these work together, the financial piece, some are, and some families are missing. So it's being able, that holistic will, if you will, of looking at those components, shoring them up, and then huddling up as a family, and then coming up with your play, if you will, to say, after this pandemic is over, and even now, what's going to be the strategies that we use and continue to use as we move forward? Did I answer your question, Carla?
Yes, thank you very much.
All right, I appreciate that, and I thank you for asking. I'll continue to keep the lines open for anyone who wants to ask a question or chime in on what's going on in their community. But I would ask you that if you're not speaking, to mute your phone because there's a lot of background noise going on if it's not your turn to speak. Caller, are you there? Join me. Welcome to the show.
This is Chrissy.
Hey, Chrissy, how are you? I'm sorry, I can't hear you. Okay, it looks
like
you
can hear me now.
Yes.
I can hear
you.
I'm great.
What you got for
me? Go ahead. I'd like to say something after Chrissy.
Oh,
okay.
I should say that I'm here. I haven't heard anything else yet, so I'm kind of a little bit behind. So I'll wait for you all to talk.
Okay, so we had a caller to call in and introduce, a question on a holistic piece in terms of what we're doing. And we decided, really quickly to answer that question, and I did my best to answer the question, but we have to continue to work on our spiritual, mental, physical, emotional, and financial health. And that health for our entire community is to be able to say, hey, we need to look at these areas, right, and target how we can become well and stay well. Does that make sense? And so as we continue to move forward, that's going to help us build a stronger community that then these values that we can place back down into our young people and into the community so that we can get better.
I'd like to say something.
Uh-huh.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
One of the things that I think that is overlooked sometimes is that, especially in the media, I have what you call, what I surmise is the Black community, and that are the communities that are being referred to that are suffering. And then you have Black people that I feel are more Black advocates because they don't live in the situation. So the community is where you live, it's where you go to school, it's your neighbors, it's who you do business with, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that the Black community is dominated with white domination in all areas. That's whether it's economics, education, entertainment, labor law, politics, religion, sex, war. We're dominated, period, in those areas. And so I think that it's not to cause despair, but sometimes, you know, before the Wright brothers flew, they had to recognize that we had to deal with gravity in order to get up in the air. We had to deal with the reality of gravity. And mm-hmm. we're asking people to pull themselves up with nothing, which is impossible. So for those of us that make it out in corporate America, you know, they fill their quotas. Once they get so many Black people, that's it. I mean, they do, you know, it's not an influx. We're going to let all these Black people in. They're going to let a few Black people in, and then after that, that's it. And so we have record number of people who are educated people who simply cannot find a job. Not due because they don't have education. So we keep pumping in education, education, education. More people are getting educated, but this is still a society that's dominated by white people that have the access to power. And when you have nothing, you have to negotiate with them. So basically, mm-hmm. they're always in the position of power that you have to come to them. So even what's happening with our Black businesses, because we don't own the distribution channels, we don't own the communication channels, are being hit hard because even though they are giving business to the Black community, to the powers that be that control their products and getting the products to them and all that, we don't own any of that. So at best, we can is participate. So I just wonder sometimes if maybe we would come to some reality, not out of despair or despondency, but, you know, we keep talking about like that the Black community has $1.2 trillion. Well, in a capitalistic world and white domination, you got the Koch brothers, two of them by themselves that control over $100 billion. So those mm-hmm. numbers sound big, but in the scheme of things, it's a drop in the bucket. So my thing is when you don't have access to capital, the only thing you can do is go get a job. When you don't have the capital and the banks won't loan to you because you don't have any collateral, and you know they'll let a few people in and showcase them and say, well, see, so and so done it, but you know. Just the reality is the Black community is operating at a deficit, and I don't know how we address that realistically without keep getting people's hopes up, and getting people's hopes up, and nothing ever comes of it because we're still kind of on that on that rabbit wheel that if you do this, you can succeed. But you can only succeed if the community, if the white dominated community says, we'll play with you. If you don't have any collateral or capital or anything like that. So I just wanted to throw that out there. What do we do?
So
if I could, one
like
call it to another.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
I just wanted to challenge the premise, although I think the sentiment I agree with, but the premise I challenge simply because I remember being in school, elementary and middle school, when there was an influx of people into this country who didn't know the language, who didn't, who were also considered minorities. And they were very poor. And I look today at my Vietnam brothers and sisters and my other Asian brothers and sisters from China. They have established themselves. They have developed systems for financing business and entrepreneurial ideas. They've gotten educated. They've learned to speak English. And oftentimes they are preferred in certain roles over native-born African-Americans. And so I do believe that it starts with the mindset, and we've gotten away from our spiritual base as a people. And some of the things and the systems that exist in this cosmos that we call the United States of America has caused us to see ourselves as handicapped in that the traditional means of accessing capital and or capability, we believe that they are in the driver's seat. And I do not believe that that has to be the case or is the case. When I was growing up, there were black banks. I had a black dentist. I had an African-American pediatrician who is still doing business in the same city and where I live. So I'm saying we've gotten away from our base, and we've gotten away from patronizing African-American businesses, and believe it or not, it doesn't take a lot to finance entrepreneurial ideas. So why not form the secret society circles that exist in some of these communities where everybody comes to the table with what they have, and proportionately they benefit from the entrepreneurial idea. The concept is to start where you are, use what you have, and do what you can.
Right. I totally agree.
It sounds like we have not only health disparities, but we have health disparities. But I think along with that comes training and development. I think education is important. And I think in most of our inner city impoverished communities, education or the disparities in educational resources is there. So how do you, in terms of development, there has to be, for me, tools in place where there is a system in place of educating, developing businesses, understanding how to manage them, own them, and operate them, and even getting your credit to a place where it is worthy of a lender offering you money, and then to be successful in that business, having those management skills as well. So there are a lot of things, I think, and both of you are right in everything that you're saying, but I think that next level is needed to get us to where we need to be full participants in this capitalistic society.
Right, and I just want to say this, is that one of the things that the caller was saying was that she experienced black doctor, a black pediatrician, and that sort of thing, and probably come from a family that was rooted in together. What I'm saying is that the communities that are suffering do not have that for a source of examples. Like I give you an example that 6% of the physicians in the United States are considered black. But of that 6%, 75% are Nigerian. And so, they have a sense of identity when they get here. My thing is, what I'm saying is that if you're lucky enough, because the law of probability, you're going to have some numbers that pop out of a disparity that still make it. But on the larger scale, when we look at physicians being 6% African American or black, and of that 6% that are black, 75% are Nigerian, that are immigrants, that come over here with a different mindset, a different language, a different culture, a different sense of identity, a different sense of determination, and they come from the wealthier homes in their country. So my thing is it's kind of like if you make it out, you just know that, you know, we used to say, there I go, you know, there I go, least for the grace of God. So there's a lot of people that have put a lot of energy, that have put a lot of time, that have done it, and, you know, that still don't make it out due to different obstacles and things like that. But in the scheme of things as a whole, not the percentage that makes it out, but if we were surviving in the inner city today with the examples they have today and the way they fund education today and what is today, what would be the likelihood of getting out of that community? With, because the black community is no longer monolithic, because we now have an educated black community. There's more, you know, a lot of the blacks now that, you know, go into the inner city are coming from out, driving back in. But I'm talking about those that are left there, those that are there that don't have those examples, because we don't, and I'm not speaking for everybody, but a lot of black people no longer live in the inner city that have, quote unquote, made it out, you know. So I'm not trying to be pessimistic. I'm just trying to look at the reality of if there's no strong home, there's no nuclear that's strong, there's not enough programs monetarily, like, you know, Boys and Girls. I mean, you know, you have organizations that help a few hundred or maybe even a few thousand, but those projects will not sustain. They're not large enough to move the larger conglomerate out of poverty, because there's only so many slots for different things. That's so, you know, I agree that, you know, we need to get back to our spiritual base, but that spiritual base, like we were talking about back in the day before integration, there was a sense of community that came out of there and a symbolism that people could see and glean from. But we have a community now that doesn't have access to that anymore. That's gone.
Okay. So let me add this component to it. So we talked about the physical health. We talked about the spiritual health. And along with that is mental health. And a lot of our people face trauma every day. And so with people dealing with different mental health concerns, how do we bridge that gap? Because some people have to have a lot of support in order to get from childhood to adolescence to get in position to be successful. I'd like to hear from some other callers in terms of what are your thoughts on the mental health aspect of it as we move forward. Anyone?
Hi, this is Yolanda. Hello.
Hey.
Hey, so I think that the mental health is really important, and I think, like you said, the trauma piece is not just a individual trauma. I think there's a collective trauma to black people and in our black community, and so I think that a lot of times we don't focus on that collective trauma and the nature of it, and someone was talking about, you know, how we have a lot of black people have moved out and are not sort of facing that day-to-day trauma of what poverty really looks like, or we're kind of one generation or two generations outside of that. And I think that because we don't see it, it's more of an aesthetic of we just talk about the notion of poverty, but we're not seeing the poverty plus the trauma and the tragedy. And I think to what the I think it was the guy that was saying is that we are not having programs and things that are consistently going to infiltrate that. So the mental health that people are going through can be really cyclical and a cycle, and it could be generational, right? So if you are facing trauma and you're a parent and then you bring someone else into that, it really is going to be something that continues to focus and face, you know, our children, and particularly our children in terms of getting an education. And so I think that, you know, when we think about like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you're not going to be able to think about, you know, SOLs or SATs or even just, you know, how to do basic homework when you are fighting for survival, right? You can't thrive when you're just basically fighting for survival in your environment, but also from an internal standpoint and not having coping skills and ways to deal with that. And so that I think that that then becomes generational, right? Because we continue to do some of those same things based on what we have developed on our own as coping mechanisms, which may not be the healthiest methods to handle the problems that we're having. And right, and access and opportunity can't be overstated. There's not enough access to mental health practitioners and enough mental health awareness for our communities. There just isn't. And so what is that access? What is health care? What does that look like? I work at a university, and a lot of our students, particularly our Black and marginalized students, are not diagnosed with mental health issues until they get here because it's the first time many of them have had consistent access to care or a psychiatrist. And I think that's really telling for a lot of our Black and brown students.
I would like to follow up. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay. My name is Tiffany Goodman. I'm actually a mental health worker as well, and I live in the inner city here in Richmond. And so the first point that you made about communal trauma, I think that was so poignant. I think one of the things that we often forget about, and especially like right now in the midst of this, the season that we're in with this COVID-19, is that one of the ways that trauma impacts us is it impacts our brain, it impacts our decision making and things like that. And it's always not so linear. We don't always see it from the beginning, but there is instant gratification versus delayed gratification when you're dealing with trauma and also with poverty. And so, you know, we go through these heavy things. We talk about community building and community wealth, but you have to really look at the long game. And that's what a lot of immigrant communities have done. And that's not to say the African-American communities haven't done it. It's just, it's a more a scarier predicament when the long game isn't always guaranteed. So there's that communal trauma component of things. But then again, yes, with the mental health where, you know, as a counselor sometimes, and even as like a client sometimes, I recognize that there's a lack of trust and a lack of the altruism of believing that if the practitioner necessarily doesn't look like me, but even when they do sometimes that this is the best place for me to be right now. And even if I'm here and I'm in the session and I feel like I'm growing, if the spaces around me aren't growing, it could feel counterproductive. So there's systemic bias in it. It's really hard for Black practitioners in practice because of the way that the system is set up and it's, you know, pay first service. And so there's a lack of insurance there in that capacity. But then as a client's perspective, there's a lack of trust as well. So we're not trusting the long game. We're not trusting the system. But I'm not saying that we should, but these are just added barriers that it takes so much relationship and time to break down.
Wow. Thank you, Tiffany. We have just a minute left, and I want to thank all the callers that come in. This is a great discussion. So we're looking at the five areas in terms of African-American spiritual, mental, physical, emotional, and financial. How do we get it together? And so we're going to come back next week, and hopefully we'll continue this conversation. Tell your friends about it. Listen to it. Download it. Share it with your friends, and we'll get the dialogue going, and maybe we can create some business, and maybe we can work on our mental and emotional health and our finances as well as continue to develop spiritually. This has been Marvin Roan. This is Empowerment 365, working on our community to better it, to have dialogue, to have a conversation, and these good people have joined us today to allow that to happen. So I thank you all. Come back and join us next week, same time, and we'll continue to have this conversation going. We appreciate you so much. Love on somebody, be positive, be peaceful, and be productive. We'll make it through together. All we have to do is continue to try. Sometimes that's all you need is just to put forth that simple effort until things change. Until next week, I'll talk to you. you soon, people. Peace.